You're listening to Thursday Night Tailgate with Chris Mascaro and Bob Lazzari, where NFL legends live on. Back to you, boys.
It's him. He's alive.
And now back with us here on Thursday Night Tailgate is former Steelers Pro Bowl defensive back JT Thomas. Let me remind you about JT's background. He's from Macon, Georgia, just a little south of me here in Atlanta. Played his college ball at Florida State. He was a first-round draft pick, the 24th overall selection in 1973 by the Pittsburgh Steelers. Played in the league from 73 to 1982, all but his last season was with the Steelers. He played that last season in Denver. He was a part of all four of the Steelers Super Bowl championship teams of the 1970s. Like I say, named to the Pro Bowl in 1976. Over the course of his career, he had 20 interceptions. He forced two fumbles, recovered one, and he scored two touchdowns. He helped seal the Steelers' 1974 AFC Championship game victory over the Raiders with an interception and a 37-yard return off Ken Stabler in the fourth quarter. Had another big interception and a fumble recovery against the Cowboys in Super Bowl X. And we are very honored he is back with us again tonight here on Thursday Night Tailgate. Hey, JT, Chris, and Bob, thanks for coming back on the show.
Welcome back, JT.
Oh, thank you for having me, guys. Happy New Year.
Happy New Year to you.
Definitely.
So, JT, a couple of quick thoughts, and I told this to Bob at the top of the show. One of the hit gifts I got this Christmas, my wife got an autographed JT Thomas jersey for me, which I now hang proudly in the studio. So, I'm incredibly grateful to whoever you worked with to sign a bunch of jerseys, but it's outstanding. So it's I'll be sharing that picture out on social media. So I thank you for that. JT, I got to get your thoughts on your alma mater, Florida State. Finished 6-7 this year and 4-4 in the ACC. They're gonna have a new head coach. Talk to me. What are your thoughts? How do you feel about where the program's headed?
Well, I think, you know, I think when Bobby Bowden left office, the program was, declining. And Jimbo, you know, obviously, I think I guess Bobby had a yacht. Jimbo had a boat. And the gentleman just fired, I think he had a raft. Right now, I mean, the new guy, he has a canoe. And for the most part, It's going to take 3 to 5 years to build a program, you know, back in Florida State. And it's very difficult to recruit when you don't have a good record. You know, you got Florida, you got Miami, and you got, you know, Clemson, other schools in the Southeast. That makes it very difficult when when the record is not that exciting. So basically, it's going to be tough. And I think hopefully they will give this new coach, 3 to 5 years to build the program, rebuild the culture. It will take that. Yeah.
JT, I want to get your thoughts on our Steelers. I mean, I feel like they're at a crossroads after an 8-8 and an injury filled season. Is it as simple as Ben Roethlisberger coming back next season healthy that this team can turn it around and compete for a Super Bowl? Or do you think other things got to change?
I think other things have to change. I don't think Ben is the key. I think Ben is probably, you know, really making his exit at this point in time. I don't see him being the catalyst person. Now, Ben is a great quarterback, a great arm, but I think if I was the head coach, I would stay with Mason as the starting quarterback and really start the new era. I don't think Ben coming back will make a difference because what they don't have any key positions or what I'm gonna call, they're great athletes, but they're not experienced players. So, and when you have, like Juju, I mean, there's no one to tutor Juju. Connors, there's no one to tutor those guys. So you got guys that will learn by trial and error, and there's no mentors there. So how do you build a program, you know, when guys in your key positions, are learning by trial and error? That will take some time. So it's gonna be, I think they might have to bring in some veteran players from somewhere. It's unfortunate that they lost Antonio, they lost Bell. Those guys could have been great mentors and tutors to the current players here, you know, because they set a different standard. But they don't have a standard now. So, I mean, so it's going to be rough next year.
JT, one of the things that you and I were communicating about a few weeks ago was, and Bob and I have been saying this for the longest time, that, you know, playing defensive back in the National Football League right now might be the hardest thing to do in sports. And when you look at all of the rules changes and, you know, the difficulty, and if you hit somebody coming across the field, You know, even if it's not, you know, a helmet to helmet or a high hit, you know, if it's a hard hit and the guy goes down hard, the flag comes out immediately. Your thoughts on what it's like trying to play DB?
Yeah, really, it's always has been the toughest position on the field, but I think, obviously the rule changes are there, but if you look at the cornerback position, typically, even when you have to bump and run, even before they made the rule changes using us as the example as to why, you only got normally one bump anyway. They turn into a foot race. I think what's really happening in college and high school, the young men are not honing those man-to-man skills. And when you get into pro, it's a throwing game where they spread you wide. So you have to play man-to-man. And if you haven't gone to a school of that, then very few schools are playing a lot of man-to-man. The guys don't have the skill set to play man-to-man. Like when I came into the league, we were afraid to play zone. I mean, zone was something I thought zone made us very vulnerable because every zone defense turned into a man. But when does it turn into a man? I don't know. I didn't want to know, you know. So I think the psychology of the game is different. What coaches, the mindset is let everything happen in front of you. Don't get beat deep. And you notice that in the play of the corner, they get on the bump and run, and the first thing they do, they bail out. Well, my question, well, why you get up there if you're not going to jam the guy? And I think part because in college, you know, they don't teach man-to-man skills. So when you get to pros, you can't play it. So it's kind of like, it's like a running catch type situation, and the receivers have the advantage. And if you notice, and you notice most of the guys get a bump and run, very few get a jam. And that was a mortal sin if you didn't get the jam. Matter of fact, they would cut you. You know, so I think part of it is that, the rule changes gave a psychological edge, took away a psycho, because when we used to play bump and run, I could hit you on the line of scrimmage or down the field, didn't matter. So when they first changed the rule, they said, okay, you can hit them within 5 yards or after 5 yards, so not both. Well, we went and won two more Super Bowls because we had the psychology still, because I could hit you here or down the field, you didn't know when. So then they came back and adjusted the rules to after 5 yards, you don't touch them. But really, if you don't get the jam within the first 2 yards, forget it, it's a foot race. And I just think the bottom line that they're not teaching man-to-man techniques in high school or in college. They're playing mostly zone. That's why guys can come from college and go into pro, because the systems are very, they're similar, they're meshed alike. And the mindset is to let them catch the ball, hug them, kiss them, and lay them down.
Bob, question for JT.
Hey, JT, it's always a pleasure talking to you, sir. And Chris had mentioned that you were a first round draft pick, 1973. And the draft back then, it wasn't the show it was now, JT. And with all the stage hands and this and that and the fanfare. But I want you to take me back to that day. Did you expect to be taken in the first round? Who did you speak to first from the Steelers? Tell me about what you remember from that day.
Well, I tell you, I had gone on a trip to Houston to meet with an agent, myself and three other guys, to watch the draft in Houston, and I decided not to stay in Houston. So I flew back to Jacksonville and took a bus to Tallahassee. Well, you know, I thought the bus go from Jacksonville to Tallahassee. I didn't know it was a 10-hour bus ride. So anyway, but long story short, I'm probably traveling 12, 15 hours, and I get back into Tallahassee. I get the day of the draft about 5 a.m. in the morning. Well, the draft, during that time, was held in the morning. Well, obviously, I missed the draft. About 3 o'clock in the afternoon, some guy was kicking on my door, my teammates, and say, hey, T, come down to the hall. Coach wants you. So I went up to the hall, and he said, where in the hell you been? I told him my trip, and I've been sleeping all day. And he said, listen, get down to the TV station. You're the number one draft choice of the Pittsburgh Steelers. Now, I have no agent. I missed the draft. And I had no idea the Pittsburgh Steelers was actually going to draft me. I haven't talked to a Steeler. I haven't seen a Steeler scout. I had no memos, no letters. I knew nothing about Pittsburgh Steelers, except that I had betted on them in Palo Alto in the East-West Shrine game, and Franco and I called it the Immaculate Bet that I made, which was kind of a segue into it was an omen, I guess, you know. But the draft that day, I was asleep. I missed the draft, and about 2 o'clock, I found out that I had been drafted number one by the Steelers.
And coming in,
I had no agent either.
Yeah. And you get to training camp, and you are going to be facing, you're looking at guys like Chuck Knoll and Bud Carson. We knew that they were, what we know now about them is incredible. But back then, they were just starting their legendary status. I mean, did they treat rookies all the same like everyone else, or were they really hard on you?
Basically, you know, back then it was drafting 17 rounds, and only two guys made the team that year. You have to understand, that was the year right before, right after Franco's and Mackler reception. So this was their first winning season, and obviously they were, you know, they were, had won in 40 years. So when I arrived, you know, and really made the team, I think the number, myself, and I think the eighth round draft choice, Lauren Taves, made it, and the number one. Those, we were only two that made the team. So when I came in, you know, they had the, really a great team at that time. You had John Lowther, who had played for Green Bay Packers under Vince Lombardi, who was an excellent corner, but an aging corner. And they brought me in primarily to replace John. But John was an awesome cornerback, and I learned a lot from John. He was probably one of the smartest cornerbacks I've met in my life. But Bob and those guys, they were it was a very physical paced game, and obviously, you know, it was personality of Chuck Knoll probably was in every player that he drafted, you know, and I guess I fit into that personality, one of his personalities, yeah. But it was tough. It was tough, the adjustment to the speed of the game, and, you know, all those guys having a team, you know how great they were, you know, at that time, because, yeah, I know Super Bowl X, we had 11 All-Pros on defense. I mean, so, you know, you don't realize the caliber you had, but I adjusted very well, and it was tough. But for the most part, I think I came prepared, and I just kind of fit in, definitely.
JT, you mentioned the immaculate reception. So I'm curious what you remember about what happened. Where were you, and what were you thinking all of a sudden this thing broke out?
Well, what happened, I'm in Palo Alto getting ready for the East-West Shrine game, college All-Star game at the time. And we just had arrived, and we had this big party, so we was eating, drinking, you know, I mean, it was in this huge auditorium type room, and so guys are taking bets. Well, I don't know how to bet. I never betted in my life. I came there with probably about $300 in my pocket from Tallahassee. So at the, you know, I'm taking bets, and being controversial, you know, it's about 30 guys, so I take 30 guys, you know, at $30 a head. Now we're drinking a little, you know, in the evening, having a good time. And it's okay until around the end of the game. You know, they said, T, you have to pay up. You know, I done betted $900, and I only came to Palo Alto with $300. I said, what have I done? And so now I become sober, come to my senses, and I'm trying to sneak out. And they told these two sous chefs, don't let T out. And these guys, they're like big sumo wrestlers, you know, these cooks. So they block the door, and they sit me in a chair next to the door. So I'm sitting there gaining my, you know, I'm becoming very sober and very sensible now. And I'm praying. I'm going back to my Catholic school days. I'm praying Hail Marys, everything, because these guys going to kill me. I don't have $900. And all of a sudden, I hear this shout. And I look up. There, number 32, who I didn't know in the hell he was either. You know. Running down the field, and they scream and they mad, and the chair I was sitting in, I stood up in it. They had two sabers on the table. I grabbed the two sabers. I told him, give me a pot. He put a pot here. So now I'm blocking the door with two sabers. No one is leaving. Well, I had about $900 in my pocket. You can imagine a 21-year-old kid out of Georgia with $900. I am rich. I am rich. And now that's all I knew about Pittsburgh. Was that I had never watched them, you know, anything else, you know, Franco Harris. But ironically now, that was in December, January when the draft, I'm drafted by Pittsburgh, you know, I guess a month or so later. And they don't get a training camp in July. Guess who my roommate is? Franco Harris.
Wow.
Yeah, it was wild. And today, Franco just celebrated, I guess, the 47th anniversary. We just celebrated of the Mackler reception, which is the greatest play in NFL history. And he said I owe him interest on that money today. He's trying to collect on me still.
And I've seen Frenchie Fuqua say he's going to take what happened on that play to his grave. He'll never tell. Is he
Frenchie,
ever inclinated to you guys?
No, Frenchie, you know, he comes out every year. He goes to the Super Bowl and he comes out with these. He's crying some days. He say the weight of carrying this all these years is burning him down. He just has to let it go. And he carries people through. It takes him an hour to get through this play. And he's crying. And he's trying to relieve his grief from this thing. And he never tells. He never tells. I mean, he is milking the hell out of this thing. I mean, he have a towel that he has. I would never tell. And then he has a towel and say, you know, I'm going to tell it all. I can't bear this burden anymore. And you know, and he had thousands of people waiting for Frenchie, and he's crying and he's looking up to heaven and saying, God help me, you know. And he never tells.
That's beautiful. JT, one more before we let you go. And we were blessed to have Elsie Greenwood on the show a few times before we lost him. And he told a story about how he and Joe Green would be in meeting rooms and film and all that sort of stuff, and how they never paid attention to that. He always, you know what, football is an easy game. See the football, tackle the guy with the football. None of that other stuff makes any difference. Is that what you remember about Elsie? Were he and Joe Green that?
Well, you know, Elsie was a very intelligent guy. He knew what was going on. Matter of fact, Elsie Greenwood, he knew the coverage in the secondary. Because sometimes, you know, if I missed the coverage, you know, because I didn't come to the huddle, he would say, T, cover three. He knew the coverage. Now what he didn't do, he didn't practice. At practice, you figure this guy, you know, he didn't show up for practice. He hates practice. But game day shows up. He never practiced. You know, practice was just kind of something he coaxed through, you know. But game day, oh, man, he was a terror. No, but those guys, I'm going to tell you something. They were a very, very gifted, very intelligent group of guys, believe it or not. And Bart Carson, who orchestrated it, was a genius. I mean, in a sense, this guy was ahead of his time. The schemes we did, the things we did, people couldn't even figure out what we were doing. And a lot of things that we did was we did a lot of improvisation because of the connection. We would sometimes create plays just by what was going on. And the coach would say, what are y'all doing? And it's just kind of like, you know, you feel the guy, you feel the gap. I mean, it was, you know, it was almost like a third or sixth sense that was happening a lot of times when we'd be in a man coverage sometimes, and based on what happened, we would convert that to a zone on one side of the field just because reacting to what was going on. And those became plays a lot of times, you know. And it was kind of a weird type of a zone that we got in and did things that really we didn't call in the huddle. But that's from the, you know, the unity, the connection, the oneness that we had, that laser focus, you know, that is kind of a very strange zone that we got in a lot of times as a team.
JT, before we let you go, remind our listeners what you're doing now.
Oh, right now I'm in the coffee business, and matter of fact, I have a couple places downtown called Tailgate.
How about that?
A session stand. Yeah. And, but I've been in the coffee dessert business, for now. I've got out of the big restaurant type chain, you know, the Applebee's, the red hot and blue type stuff about, 8 years ago. So I'm still in the food business, and I do desserts. I got a dessert company. So I'm still putting food in people's mouths. What I do, coffee, desserts, those type of things.
Well, JT, we can't thank you enough for coming back and joining us again tonight. It's always a treat to get to spend some time with you. We hope you'll come back and do it again real soon.
Oh, it's my pleasure, guys. You guys take care and be blessed, okay?
You take care.
Happy
too.
New Year thank to you and your family. Take care, JT.
Thank you, guys. Okay, bye-bye.
Good night.
That is former Steelers Pro Bowl defensive back JT Thomas. What a great guy, Bob. I always enjoy getting to spend some time with him.
Yeah, and again, we never even scratched the surface, Chris, of all those old Steeler teams. We can talk to him all night long. And that name, Bud Carson, he keeps coming up every defensive player that played under him. So what does that say? It's really special when you get it right from the mouth of a guy that played with him, played for him. So again, it's an honor to speak with any of those guys from the old Steeler team.
We've got our next guest, Tony Collins, hanging on the line. We'll get to our five-star picks of the week with Tony on the other side of this real quick station break.